All right, a few things locally. We'll bounce around a little bit. First things first, Jay Ducker, who has been in the transfer portal the last couple weeks, Bellevue West grad, who then went off to Northern Illinois and had a very good freshman season. He is now out of the transfer portal, and his landing spot is Memphis. He announced on his Twitter page just a couple minutes ago. He says, "Let's work." Hashtag GTG. Maybe go Tigers go would be my guess.
It's kind of a weird hashtag.
But yeah, so he goes from the MAC to the AAC. Jay Ducker does. I was curious to see who would jump in on that. And obviously with a close eye on Nebraska, but once it kind of became clear that that wasn't going to be where he ended up, I think he takes a bit of a step up from Mac, and I was certainly curious as to why he left Northern Illinois. He kind of becomes the guy, and maybe just a little bit bigger of a profile here at Memphis. Obviously, they've turned out NFL backs before, so we'll see what that landing spot looks like for him. He's off to Memphis. Other couple things I wanted to mention. Oh yeah. And I don't know that this hasn't become official yet, but now the World Herald and Journal Star both reporting that the deal between Nebraska and their new running backs coach, Brian Applewhite, is imminent and may be announced as early as this afternoon. Who knows? Maybe before we get off the air here, Brian Applewhite, last stop was at TCU. Originally from Brighton, Colorado, and was a player at Northern Colorado in the 90s. Obviously, because he fills out Nebraska's staff here. So there it is. This is what you're working with now going into 2022 for Nebraska football. They reshuffled the deck a little bit, obviously in a major way on the offensive side of the ball. New running backs coach, Brian Applewhite. New wide receivers coach, Mickey Joseph. New offensive line coach, Donovan Raiola. You added a offensive coordinator. New offensive coordinator in Mark Whipple. You added a special teams coordinator in Bill Bush. And that's a significant staff overhaul there. And then you lost Tony Tuioti on the defensive line and gave his responsibilities over to a coach that you already had on the staff and Mike Dawson. So that is, I mean, when you put it all together, I guess I hadn't really even thought about it because, that's the thing. We get so caught up in the moment on these things and it's like, all right, well, that guy's gone. Who's the next guy going to be? And now you get a chance to kind of look at it as a whole. And not that we really have a great understanding of who these guys are, and we're learning that, or what they kind of bring to the table a little bit better with Joseph Whipple and Raiola, because we got a chance to chat with them a few weeks ago now. But just off the face, guys, that's a significant overhaul. It was going to have to be that if you remember the feeling at the end of last season. They felt like, yeah, we're gonna have to make some major changes here. New ideas in the room. It's not just new ideas in the room either. It's how do you go about your business? It's, getting people a little bit uncomfortable, getting new thoughts, yes, all that stuff. But it'll have to be a short meshing period for the staff and get your roster in place and get things kicked off. So not yet exactly official, but now, locally reported by both of the major newspapers that Brian Applewhite is going to be the guy. And that announcement is expected as early as this afternoon. Here's what I do like. And with the exception of Raiola, what you've added to the staff is a whole bunch of experience. You've gotten older as a staff, and not that that means everything, but you've definitely added a bunch of experience to the table. Applewhite has been around college football for quite some time, played in the 90s. I wouldn't necessarily qualify him as an old guy, but he was at the Wyoming. He was on the Wyoming staff. He coached at Northern Colorado. And spent some time, you know, around a whole bunch of people in the game. That's just Applewhite. Obviously, Whipple and his track record and his experience doing a whole bunch of different stuff for a whole bunch of different offenses and a whole bunch of different places in the country, as you heard from him talk. You heard him talk about when he was speaking a couple weeks ago. Gave us the whole track record there. And that's good. Mickey Joseph comes with a little bit of knowledge of here, also great recruiting ties, and a general experience and wealth of knowledge as well. That's good. Raiola, a younger guy getting his first, you know, full-time gig, really, after being the assistant offensive line coach for the Chicago Bears, but obviously has the bloodlines and the knowledge of Nebraska a little bit, and you could tell with him brings a toughness and edge, a physicality. It feels like they had things that they were trying to accomplish, and this is overall what I like about the entire thing, not just the experience. Maybe I'm connecting too many dots here that just, you know, can't be connected, but it feels like they had a specific thing that they wanted out of each of those position coaches, a specific trait, a specific quality that they were looking for, and they went out and tried to find the guys that fit that. That's good. That's good news. It's not just, oh, we had success with this, and I like this idea, and we're going to make it work. No. I mean, originally that's kind of what Scott Frost's staff was, right? And I think a lot of those guys are good coaches and they're definitely good people. But the original thought there was, you know, we have continuity with each other, yes, and this has worked before. So we will copy and paste it to Nebraska and it will work again. Maybe a little short-sighted. Maybe a little. And it became clear after a couple years that just changes need to be made. So you now get this opportunity to do so. That's how I, you know, that's when you're in therapy, right? Like, thank you for the opportunity. They get this opportunity to change, and it doesn't work unless you take advantage of it, unless you actually do something with it. And they did something, they have done something different here. That's good. That is good for Nebraska football. We'll see where it all lands next year, but I like the thought process behind it. Elsewhere, still in the still out there, Trevante Citizen.
Great name.
Awesome name. See, you don't get these guys available about around this time of year. Highly rated, four-star back, number 113 on the 24/7 Sports Composite. This is a running back from Lake Charles, Louisiana. Oh, did your ears perk up a little bit, Mickey Joseph? They should have.
I was about to foolishly say we have a lot of running backs in the room right now. And
yeah, well, you're still in the hunt with a good one. Here are Trevante Citizen's top eight schools.
Love a top eight.
Yeah, we need to get more of that. Top 14s. Top 22s. LSU. Is that Grambling?
I believe it is.
Or
yes.
Georgia. Yeah, it's Grambling, yeah.
It is the Grambling colors, but they do share a logo.
Okay. Grambling. LSU. Michigan State. Miami. Florida. USC. Auburn. Nebraska. Nebraska in the running, obviously, with their connections to Mickey Joseph. So that would be a huge get for Nebraska in the running back room. That would be we were just talking about Brian Applewhite entering the conversation now for Nebraska football. That would be kind of how I'd play the running back room based off of what you haven't got from it in the past as far as the production standpoint. And I like Ramir Johnson. I think we know about him. He's a keeper. He's a serviceable running back. I'm not sure if you want him to be your every down back. And they kind of had to mix and match it. They had to piece it together last year. But I would just throw a whole bunch of talent in there, throw a whole bunch of, it's easier said than done, but throw a whole bunch of dudes in there and see what comes out. And I think that's probably been close to what they've tried to do over the last couple of years with, no real success behind it. Once you get there, you're kind of rebuilding the room. You've lost a few guys that you've recruited. You've added at pieces. You added a Texas A&M transfer, DeAndre Jackson, over the last couple of days, and now you want to go in on another one, and Trevante Citizen's still in it at the moment. So throw a whole bunch of guys in there and see where it lands. We'll see if they're able to get there a top eight. Woo! Top eight. Elsewhere, locally, there's a few more stories locally that I wanted to get to. Oh, yes. Bud Crawford.
Yeah, wow. This popped yesterday.
Somebody called in yesterday, and they were like, you guys need to talk about Bud Crawford. Like, I hadn't seen anything about this yet. And so what happened was, and maybe he was just clairvoyant, or maybe he was just like, hey, you guys need to talk about Bud Crawford. And then 2 hours later, a story dropped about how Bud Crawford has filed a lawsuit against his former promoter, Top Rank, Bob Arum, alleging racial bias on the part of the company's chairman. That's Arum. The suit alleges that Arum continues to make racist and bigoted statements and purposefully damage the reputations of black boxers. And Arum had a quote back, and he was like, well, the guy just doesn't really promote himself. He's not good at that part of it. And here's what Arum said to the New York Post. Don't call a man racist when really this is because of your own failures, Arum told the New York Post. His marketability didn't measure up to his ability, and that absolutely has nothing to do with what his race is. The outstanding fact is that Terrence's numbers on pay-per-view have always been dreadful because of his failure to market himself. Here's what I would argue. Your title is promoter. That probably...
Bud's title is boxer.
Right.
Some might argue that a more marquee opponent might have helped the cash flow.
Yeah. And things have broken down on that front. At least for the time being. And that's why he left Top Rank. I don't know what's next for Bud. I will say this. It feels to me as if, we're on the clock here a little bit. Getting up there in age.
Yeah, all of a sudden you kind of look back and realize, probably don't have a ton of these left.
Well, it has felt like now for several years after he kind of burst onto the scene, at least for us, and maybe it isn't this way nationally, but after he kind of burst on the scene, it was just, step up and step up and step up. And in terms of size of fight or quality of fighter that you were going against. And there's always kind of a different challenge. And at some point, maybe over the last couple, that has stalled out.
Yeah, it sort of plateaued after the jump in weight classes.
Yeah.
I think the first two fights after that felt bigger than the ones before it, but now it's sort of plateaued.
It feels like that's stalled out a little bit. And so I can understand why you want to make a move from the promoter perspective. But that was a bit surprising there. And I wonder what happens next? But I mean, if we go, this entire time and people have been really begging for this fight, the Spence fight, for years now, this has been like, you know, the holy grail. It's like, we got to get this thing to happen somehow. If we, you know, if we don't get that, that's going to be really disappointing. And I know it's going to be disappointing for Bud too.
And I don't want it like a Mayweather Pacquiao thing where,
right,
this would have been great years ago.
It seems like a novelty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't want that either.
All right, we're giving what you want.
That's why when the whole Pacquiao thing was floated around, it was like, yeah, it's going to be Bud and Pacquiao. I'm like, that's not fun.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to see Pacquiao fall on his face, but
right.
Yeah.
I appreciate him finding a big name and all that stuff, but like, yeah, that doesn't move the needle much for me. I want to see the challenge.
And I do see the strategy there. I will book him against a big name that he will probably win. Although Pacquiao had a little late surge there.
He did.
It might have been an interesting fight.
Yeah.
But Bud wins that fight conceivably, and then, oh, you've made a star, essentially, even though it was sort of set up to,
right,
that he was going to win.
So we'll see what becomes of that and what's next for Bud. But seems to have, you know, stalled out on the fight front. Anyway, one more local story for you here. Mike Sauter wrote this yesterday. And a lot of talk of adding a shot clock to the high school basketball scene, which, I mean, just to get the initial thoughts out here, I mean, the whole thought behind it is you want to have somebody who can operate it, and it, you know, you have to cover the costs of it, and that has to be consistent on a site-to-site basis. I understand, you know, what goes into that. Once you do it, and it's, you know, the one-time overhead cost for the shot clock, and you get the operator on there, and it's not hard to train the person, it's done, right? It's over with. And then it becomes a part of what we do. And I think you saw that probably at the Metro tournament this year. But however, on Tuesday and Wednesday at the NSA district legislative meetings, only two of the six districts voted to pass the Class A only shot clock proposal. And as of right now, those talks seem to have stalled out as well. In order for the Class A only proposal to be approved, it now needs a full court buzzer beater. According to Sauter, the next step is the NSA board of directors will consider the proposal at an April board meeting. Historically, the board tends to vote the way the membership in their district voted. If the proposal isn't approved by the board at that point, which would take a Hail Mary or a buzzer beater, it will continue to be discussed for years to come. So, not there yet. Not sure what changes. That's the whole thing. Like, I was talking about it with the playoff yesterday. We get these people in the room, and they're probably asking the question of, like, okay, what's changed?
Yeah, what's changed from the last time we talked about this?
Right.
We still don't have the money.
Yep.
Well, we're not playing with peach baskets anymore. Like, this is kind of the way it is, and sorry, you need a shot clock.
Like, what do I have to do to convince you that this is a good idea? Because that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
Maybe it just has to be on the table for years and years and years before, you know, anything moves.
We often hear excuses, the cost of doing business. This is the cost of doing business.
Yep.
You need a shot clock in 2022.
It just, you know, and to be honest with you, I don't know that I'm sitting here like pounding the table because we need this desperately. But I do think it often when, you know, you get into those very specific situations where, you know, either there will be a team that clearly can't keep up pace-wise and they just want to play chew the clock. I've seen, you know, I went to Central. That's how you beat Central. when I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I watched Grand Island dominate a tournament in 2003.
Oh, yeah.
Against, I want to say, a Nick Baugh Lincoln team.
Oh,
and
wow.
A pretty good Burke team that year. And Grant Allen just held the ball and
yeah, I specifically advanced. I specifically remember, I think it was a game. I don't know what year it was for. I guess I was in high school. But and this is before Millard North is the Millard North you know now. But Millard North just like they just held the ball. Four corners did the entire game. I think the final score was in the 20s or 30s or something like that. It was the most frustrating experience I've ever seen. And Central would go down and either they would shoot their shot. They would play real basketball. Mm-hmm. They would go down and either make or miss.
Yeah.
And Millard North would just hold on to it. So you get into those rare situations where that occurs, and man, do you need it in that.
Is there a legislative workaround? Like, okay, we won't make you install a shot clock, but we will impose a rule that pace of play needs to increase?
I say public ridicule.
Okay.
I think you should be publicly shamed if you hold the ball for the entire quarter. I don't know how you could officially publicly shame somebody. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe there
Send
needs to be...
Send us an email. We'll take care of that for you.
Yeah, there needs to be some sort of reprimand.
Yeah.
Or, this happens more commonly where the team will just hold out for the last shot of the quarter at a minute and a half left. That's, and that's a positive thing where you could bring that in and it, boom, fixes up that problem immediately. So, dead for now. Hopefully not totally dead, but...
I would be on board with people emailing us. I was at the so-and-so gymnasium Friday night, and so-and-so held the ball. And
I think we need more of that in our society anyway. I think we've become a little bit too nice.
Public, the rules.
Yeah. Pro bullying.
Yeah.
Public shaming. It's all good. All right, we'll come back and tell you what to watch on TV tonight as we round things out next on the Connor Happer Show on 1620 The Zone.